the Cochrane Show. This is the Cochrane Show. It's not the whole show like you get every day. It's the shorter version in the podcast way. You must remember less time helps you stay. Yeah, this is the Cochrane Show. Yeah, this is the podcast show.
My old friend Jim Gaffigan's here, and I'm very excited for you. Now, I mean this with all seriousness, because you and I goof around all the time.
Yes.
But the idea that someone with your footprint in show business is one of the best comedians in the country, you sell out all these buildings, big shot comedy star, could be cast in a movie that is so against type. This just doesn't happen in Hollywood.
No, well, it's a great opportunity. I mean, it's I love acting, and the entertainment industry is very much, you know, constructed on
you do that, and yeah, that's what you do.
They limit the risk.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like if you're good at anything, or you have success, I should say, people, it's just kind of lazy, I guess, but it's risk averse. I think the entertainment industry is very, it's the state of Missouri. It's like, show me.
Right.
So you have to show me right before I will.
But you've done acting. You've done Broadway. Yeah. You've done other things that show you had chops. Is that what led to this? Or were you getting a shot at this?
No, I think it was casting director Mary Verneau sticking out her neck for me. Yeah. And so that's what you need. You need champions. Like even this movie, American Dreamer, it's like you need people to champion things, because otherwise there's just so many options out there of stuff to watch.
But this is a Robin Williams thing. Robin Williams, and we can disagree on this. Robin Williams was a really good stand-up, but he was a better actor than he was a stand-up.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the 10-year-old me would disagree.
But you and I are about the same age. When we were growing up, Robin Williams was this bananas act that would come on The Tonight Show. And if you saw him do stand-up, and I worked with him a couple of times, off the wall, threw everything against the wall as fast as he possibly could. And if 65% of it stuck, it was a huge night.
Yes.
And it was really big. But then he transitions into this amazing career as a dramatic actor.
Yeah.
And he nailed it. I don't know anybody that's been able to do that. So anyway, I'm super excited about you, my friend. All right, so let's talk about the movie, American Dream. Give him the premise.
So the premise is I play a rideshare driver who is, people are rideshare drivers for different reasons.
Sure.
You know, some of them, it's kind of like a side job. Some of them are in school. Some of them, this is like their last gig.
Right.
And this guy's kind of like, this is his last option. And eventually he's, you know, that ride sharing thing is not that profitable. So he ends up driving around a drug dealer, which kind of backfires. And he's this guy that, I looked at him as, you know, we're all a couple of bad decisions away from being in this guy's position.
Great take on it.
It's weird. It's weird playing a guy who is, he blames everyone else for his problems.
Right.
So there's an absence of accountability. And so I identify with that. I struggle with that. You know, it's everyone else's fault. It's not my fault that I'm fat. It's everyone else's fault.
I would argue there's a good portion of America that lives in that world all the time.
Yeah. And so the movie, it's a thriller. So that was fun to kind of, these scenes that build upon scenes and see what is going to, you're really dying to know what happens. But, when you do, this is an indie film. This is a low budget film. And, often I'll go in and I'll see indies after I've done them and I'm like, okay, that's all right. But this one's good. This one's one of those where, I wouldn't watch it with a kid.
Right. But it's got that Hitchcock thing to it because it builds. Now, here's the thing. In an indie film, you can't hide behind crazy stunts and lasers and stuff blowing up and $10 million car chases. You got to actually act.
You do.
So seeing you in this movie, even if you've just seen the trailer, where does the anger come from? Because I don't want to get too deep in actor talk here, but you got to be able to call that up. You got to be able to bring that out. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, I think anger, I mean, I think every man has anger, right? Yeah. I mean, I have three sons, and I think that for men, it's like we're the ones that become civilized. I feel like women are, they're the civilized ones. Men are the ones that are kind of, we have to, you know, control our anger. And
we have to evolve to get there.
Yes, we have to get there, I think. But... Yeah, no, I have anger underneath. I mean, I think that's why comedy is so effective, is like when something bothers me, it'll kind of, you know, it'll ruminate inside me, and then I'll find a way to articulate it as funny.
But I grew up in upstate New York among some real hardworking blue-collar folks, the same way you did in Indiana. Yeah. I know people like the guy you play in this movie. Who, again, are only one or two bad decisions away from doing something so incredibly stupid or dangerous that a lot of people are going to get hurt and you're going to go away.
Yes.
And I know a couple of people that did go away.
Yeah.
So, if you remember the Michael Douglas movie Falling Down, it's a little bit of that, except he was already there.
Yeah.
What I love about your character is you get punched again and again and again. It's not breakfast was supposed to be served till 10:30 and it's 10:31 and you can't serve it to me now. It's much bigger than that. You lose a job. You lose a family.
Yep.
And now you're in a job where people don't even know or care who you are.
Yes.
Just get me there.
There's, and, you know, and I think why it's called American Dreamer is because we're all led to believe everything's going to be okay. You know, you follow the rules and things will go your way. And, you know, it's a cruel world. And this guy, Cam, is, you know, he's definitely doesn't take some accountability for his own actions. He does some stuff that you're like, I don't know why he's doing that. But when I was playing him, you know, you feel such compassion. You end up really liking these people you play. You have to.
Of course.
Where you're
you
like,
can't hate yourself while you're doing the
thing. Yeah, you can't be acting. You can't be like, oh, this is how the guy would open the door. You have to be like, this is how I'm going to open the door. And so... It's fascinating because there was frustrating times. I mean, I think everyone identifies with times where you're like, I'm going to do the most insane thing. But unlike Falling Down, where Michael Douglas was kind of just
got a little cartoonish.
In a rage.
Yeah.
This guy, it's a slow build. And I think that, you know, for me, I wanted to construct it where you empathize with the guy.
Well, the interesting thing about the way this goes and the way you play this guy is, you feel throughout the movie like he could pull it back.
Yeah.
The tension's building, but at some point, he's not going to go too far. He's going to catch it, and he's going to pull it back. And not going to give away the ending, but it gets bigger than that.
Yeah. It's pretty fascinating. Again, I think it's like...
Did you know anybody like that in your life?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Can we have their full name? No.
Yeah, sure. No, I remember, you know, being a teenager and... You know, my friend Rob and Mike, we used to drive around the McDonald's parking lot. That's literally what we did for fun on a Friday night. We'd drive around McDonald's and criticize. And we were scared and angry and, you know, the girls weren't talking to us. So, you know.
Fear, insecurity.
And it wasn't our fault.
Yep.
It was all these other people's fault.
Right.
So. And they're perfectly fine men now, but like in that moment, you know, there was definitely some of Cam there.
See, I had an Uncle Arnie, and he's long gone, but when we were kids, this is one of the meanest people I've ever met, and he was mean for the sake of being mean.
Yeah.
As an adult.
Yeah.
Terrible father, mean guy, and I see a lot of Cam in him or him in
Cam. Oh, really? Yeah.
The only difference is he stops one short of where Cam eventually goes in this movie.
Yeah.
But I felt the same kind, even watching the trailer again,
the
same sort of anxiety, and this is a compliment to you as an actor, created by you, as I felt in real time growing up with this guy around me, because he had a horrible motorcycle accident. He laid the bike down, smacked his head, the whole deal. So that's how the whole family wrote it off all the time. Oh, yeah, he's having a bad day. You remember he had the motorcycle accident.
Right.
Well, he had it probably 10 years before I was even born. And at some point, get some help. Get over the motorcycle accident. You don't get to be a dick to everybody.
Yeah.
And that's who he was.
Yeah, there is... You know, you got to do work on yourself.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? You have to... It's easy to just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that attitude. But some of it is you got to look in the mirror and go, what am I doing wrong?
Right.
And what's so annoying is you have to continue to do it.
Yeah, it's a lifetime project.
Yeah, it's how annoying is that?
Exhausting.
It's ridiculous. You're like, but I figured out how I was a jerk in my 30s. Now I have to figure out how I'm a jerk at this age.
Right, all the way to the end.
Right to the point
where you pick the box out all the way to the end. Now, the cool thing about this script is there's a lot of cams walking around all over the place.
Yeah.
And we're never going to know about them.
Right.
But they're affecting families, and they're doing things all over the country. There's families that walk around in that sort of terror that you put your ex-wife and son in.
Yeah.
That goes on every day.
Well, I think some of it's undiagnosed mental illness,
no
too.
No question.
You know what I mean? I'm on Prozac. It's like, but, you know, and if you told me in high school that I would be on Prozac, I'd be like, oh, would I be in a mental ward? Do you know what I mean?
Right. Because we weren't allowed to think that that's something that you need treatment for, like you need for a heart condition or anything else.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's this balancing act of, I don't know, there's nothing wrong with admitting you're wrong. I mean, I've never been wrong, so
right.
I don't have
but
to worry about it.
But if you are.
If I was.
You could now.
I could, maybe. You know, I would turn away and go, remember the days of, like, Henry Winkler? Yeah. Like, he couldn't, in a Happy Days, he couldn't say he's sorry. He's like, this.
Right.
It's like, what were we raised with?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And especially as men.
Yeah.
As men. Oh, you couldn't be more weak. You start showing your hand that you're sorry?
Yeah.
What, are you a pussy? Come on.
Vulnerability is a very interesting thing because that's what people respond to in comedy, too, is, you know, that's what you respond to in your friends.
Right.
Is that they're vulnerable and they're human. And anyway.
There's a great moment from your latest special, which, you know, that's funny throughout, but it just 100% nailed it when you talk about XXL. I made it.
Yeah.
How about a hand for me?
Yeah. It's a pretty interesting threshold, right?
Right.
Because it's also everyone. There's like, right. It's not like, oh, we're in the minority.
Nope.
It's also, you get in your late 40s, your metabolism comes to a screeching halt.
Yeah.
And, you know, your knees don't work, so you can't work out that much.
Nope.
So you're just like, you know what? I'll just go up to 2XL. This isn't that bad.
Give it a little room. I can still buy a shirt.
You know, like, it's weird, but I would never even fathom being in the 2XL world.
Nope.
Like, when I was in the XL thing, I was like, I can't believe I'm XL. I mean, I've been XL before, but 2XL, there's a certain resignation with that. You're like, you know what? I'm going 2XL.
And here's the thing. I talk about this all the time. One of the reasons this country is so fat is food's too easy to get. There's no risk. There's food on every corner.
Yeah.
You know, rest of the world, you could get killed finding food tonight.
Yeah.
But here, food everywhere. Now, the clothes.
Yeah.
There's big and tall shops all over the place.
Well, I think also there's big clothing. You don't even have to go to a store now. You can just like... All right, I'll get this shirt. I was in Europe.
House.
I did some shows in Europe, and I needed pants. And I was in the airport, and their airports are so amazing. I don't know where I was, Copenhagen. And I was like, all right, I'm going to buy some pants.
Because there's a whole mall right at the airport.
There's a whole mall.
Yeah.
And I went in two stores, and they didn't have pants that would fit me. And I was like, wow. What happened? Do you know what I mean? Like, so there's no guy with a 40-inch waist that comes into your store in this international airport. No, obviously no.
Right. That's where we are.
Isn't that amazing?
It really is. And I remember the first time I walked into a big and tall shop, and I've lost some weight.
Yeah.
And I'm going in the right direction. At any point, I could fall off and go back to the other spot. But I remember the first time I walked into a big and tall shop, it was like the old video stores before the internet, where if you wanted to see a naked girl, you had to go through like these beads that dropped down through the back room where there's this dark area where there's some other videos. Yeah. I felt like, oh, I hope nobody sees me. I'm going into the big and tall store.
Yeah. There is the and even when I've been in those stores, there's a little bit of like, so you couldn't get a job at a regular store.
Right.
Which is not fair. Or the guy who's running it or owns it is such a genius.
Right.
Like, whereas the rest of like retail hasn't figured out.
But don't you think there ought to be in those stores? It's like seeing a fat guy at a health club at the front desk. In those stores, there ought to be a fat guy selling you clothes.
I
don't want to see a guy in shape. And the last thing I want to see is a hot girl.
Oh, that's a great point.
Right?
That's a great point. Because it's, yeah, it's... Well, I think it's also hard. I mean, Chicago, I I got to my hotel at 8, and I probably spent 2 hours convincing myself not to get a deep dish pizza. I grew up in Northwest Indiana. I don't know. I had it maybe like once every 5 years. I've come to Chicago 4 times in the last year, and I've had deep dish pizza every time. It's almost like I treat it like it's about to become illegal. Like, I should probably get it. You know, I don't know if they're going to allow this anywhere. It's like, I could get it shipped to New York. They have, like...
Right.
And it's, I don't know what happened. And, of course, I had, like, a cheeseburger last night at 11 o'clock. That was $500.
And that's healthy. I think we can both agree. Have a cheeseburger at 11,
but
fall asleep by 11:15.
Do your joints hurt?
Sure, inflammation. Yeah, inflammation. Yeah. You know what that is? That's salt. You know what salt is? It's stuff that makes your food taste good. It's all one big full circle.
You ever try something that doesn't have a flavor in it?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, so people just eat this?
Right, because, again, it comes back to America. There's other food.
Yeah.
We can get the stuff that tastes good.
Yeah.
We don't have to eat the shoe.
Well, there's also, I feel as though... I blame my kids, which is completely unfair. But like when I was a bachelor, I didn't have that stuff. I didn't have stuff in my refrigerator.
Right.
So therefore, I couldn't eat it.
Right.
A lot of times I eat because I'm bored.
Right.
All right. I'm watching Sunday Night Football.
Sure.
All, you know, there's no room service when you're a bachelor.
Right. And if it's not in your refrigerator, you're in this shape. You don't feel like going out at that hour.
Yeah.
So if it's not there, you're not going to eat.
Yeah. We figured it all out.
We've got it all planned out. Now, let me get back to this movie for a second.
Yeah.
American Dreamer, theaters everywhere. When do we open?
It's theaters everywhere on Friday, but that's 10 cities in the U.S. And then it's video on demand. And I learned
almost
this.
Immediately?
It's immediately on video
on
demand.
Okay.
And I learned this when I released Noble Ape, where it was also in limited theaters, and then it was on video on demand. A lot of people rent things video on demand, you know, iTunes or whatever. And so my kids are so young, I have to buy every movie on iTunes because they'll watch it 10 times.
Right. Well, the Hollywood accounting thing now, do they count? I mean, you got to have the big first weekend. That's a big deal. But isn't that more to decide whether you're bankable going forward? Because the video on demand thing, that's where all the money's being made, right?
That is where all the money. Well, I think, I don't know anything about the movie business, but I think that we are in a time where, unless there's a superhero or Jennifer Lopez on a pole,
I do her stunts, by the way. You know that.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if people go to movies. Like they used to.
I think
so
that's true.
Some of, and small indies where it's a thriller. You know, this movie, we shot this movie over 16 days. So it's like, it's not a big budget.
Kidding me? You got it done in
16 days.
That's unbelievable.
16 days, and there were all night shoots because it happens over the course of a night.
It's dark,
so it's delirious.
Literally.
And so, this is one of those micro budget movies that. It's interesting, this world we live in. But again, if it was a superhero movie, there would be, if they spent $40 million, they'd spend $10 million on promotion.
Yeah, and none of it in front of a green screen. I'm talking about American Dreamer.
Yeah. And this was, it's like.
Because it doesn't look like, I don't know how else to describe this. I'm going to say, it doesn't look like you shot it in 16 days.
No. And I'm almost kind of reluctant to say that because I want to give people reasons to see it. But, what I would say is, like, I've done other movies where it's hard to do a movie, but this one's good.
It's really good.
It's a movie where you're like, it's worth your time. Time's everything.
It absolutely is. Because we've never been busier checking our phones.
Right.
And checking everything else in our life.
And seeing what people are outraged about.
Right, exactly. You're the woman that plays your wife.
Yes.
Tremendous.
Yeah, she's
and
great.
A bit of a scene stealer, because she's not in a lot of the movie.
No, she's not. And she's, but she's a... I think she's on Broadway right now.
Is she?
I mean, she's amazing.
And the guy that plays the drug dealer.
Yeah.
Where'd you find him?
They found him. He's a TV actor. That guy, Robbie Jones, he was in character the entire movie.
Oh, so he's method.
And so...
So you got to talk to him like that at catering?
Well, here's the thing. I didn't know that he was doing a method thing until we wrapped, and then this warm, bubbly guy came out. Because he plays a really dark, heavy guy where he's like, you're like, oh, this guy doesn't like me. Right. And then at the end, he's like, geez, Jim, I just think that you were so good in the movie.
Wow.
And I'm like, wait a minute, what happened?
Who are you?
But some of it is the method thing. It's not so much, I don't think it's necessarily motivated out of... some grand kind of artistic thing. It's almost easier to stay in character.
Yeah, it's a necessity for a particular actor.
And focus.
Daniel Day-Lewis. I mean, that guy's done a few things.
Yeah.
If you were on the set of Lincoln, he was always Lincoln.
Right.
He was standing there grabbing a Snickers bar.
As Lincoln.
As Lincoln.
But there's also, you know, it makes sense in some ways.
Of course it does.
If you can pull it off.
Right.
Well, you know, like supposedly my left foot, he had people carry him to set.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
I've heard that.
Which is insane. But if you're going to play someone who can't move.
Be that guy.
Don't move.
Be that guy. All right. Now, my hope for you is, and I think it's obvious it's going to happen, is that you're going to get offered stuff now that's a broader range. I mean,
I would love it.
Because now you're still going to get the funny stuff. But there's going to be people that go American Dreamer, because the way casting agents work is they want to go what worked before,
right?
What works now,
right?
So you must feel good about that.
Well, you know, I hope, you know, there's, you know, the entertainment industry is brutal.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I did this play on Broadway. I've done other indie films. You don't have control over what's going to get the industry's attention. But if this can help me get another job, that's all I'd want.
Well, educate me on something, because when I was doing meaningless one- and two-line parts in a few movies in the 90s, I didn't act. You know, honestly, I didn't really have Tom Cruise-like sway in Hollywood.
Well, I would think you do.
Now, is it more important to be bankable right away, or do you have to have a killer agent as well who's going to sell you to people?
Some of it is I don't know.
Okay.
I would say, look, I'm, you know, a balding fat guy. So it's not like...
Careful with the balding.
You know what I mean? It's not like people are like, I want to look at that guy for an hour and a half. And also, I should say that I'm only pursuing things that are creatively fulfilling.
Right.
I know that sounds like BS.
No, but you make all the money you need plus from stand-up. You don't need this.
And
you need this for fun. You need this for fulfillment.
For fulfillment,
right?
It's you know, there's something about... So I've been offered some stuff that maybe would raise my profile that is not really appealing. It's, you know... And I've had jobs that I didn't like.
Sure.
So, I mean, we all have, but like, I don't want to, it's like, I've been doing this too long to do something just, and I love stand up and I can make my living doing that. So I can pick and choose the type of roles. And I also have five kids. And if I'm turning to my wife who survived a brain tumor.
And is doing great, right?
And it's doing great.
Good.
I can't be like, I'm going to do this movie I don't even want to do.
Right.
You know
I'm going
to
be in the Sahara for 3 months.
Yeah.
When I get a signal.
Yeah. I have to do something that will, that's fulfilling. And it's weird. It's oddly, you know, doing a dramatic role or being a piece in a larger story is very rewarding.
And you know, the best TV is the TV that's not the TV you and I grew up on. The three-channel universe doesn't have the best TV.
No.
They're just doing reality shows and different things. It's HBO, it's Showtime, it's Amazon, it's Prime, it's whatever.
Yeah.
Are you seeing some of that action, too?
You know, there's some discussion of some stuff like that, but it is also a certain commitment level, because I've been on a TV show where you're committed for 5 years, and, you know, you have to like the job.
It's, well, when you and your wife were writing your show.
Yeah.
And then you're doing the show.
Yeah.
I mean, that's 12 hours a day nonstop.
It's just too much.
And you still have the kids, obviously.
And obviously, we stopped because you can't abdicate your responsibilities of being a parent. You can't do it to both parents. Obviously, you know, people are in the military and they have to leave, but like, hopefully there's a spouse there to look after the kids.
Sure.
Or a grandmother.
Sure.
So we didn't really have that option. And so, you know, we had to just stop the show because it was just too much.
Sure. Sure. But I don't know. I mean, this feels like a really good time for you.
Oh, I'm grateful.
You know what I mean? I mean, it feels like you got everything you want from stand-up. You can do what you want, when you want, that people love coming out and seeing you. But now, this stuff coming your way, it comes from hard work. And again,
yeah,
I've known you a long time. You frighten me a little as Cam. but there is a side there that people need to see. So I want them to see this movie.
I think every man has this side.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. American Dreamer, video on demand. If you're in Chicago and other fine cities that have it as of this Friday, this weekend, go out and see it in the big theater. And then come home and tell your friends. And if you want to see it on video on demand, you know, download it twice to make sure Jim gets money for both.
I won't get any, but please download it.
Oh, this is one of those deals where you take $8 because you like the script?
Well, it's indie film.
That's true.
You do it, you know, someone's probably making money, but it's not going to be me.
Well, I'm proud of you, man.
Thank you.
It's a very cool thing.
Appreciate it.
And if people want to follow you all the time, what, JimGaffigan.com?
JimGaffigan.com.
Yeah.
And I'm coming back to Chicago.
Yeah, you have a show coming up.
October 12th, 13th, around there.
Chicago Theater, right?
Chicago Theater.
Yeah, it's a lot of seats. I'm glad you could sell it.
I'm excited.
And you still want me to come in and juggle for half an hour?
I want you to come. You're going to juggle.
Yeah.
You'd be good at passing out flyers, too.
You know what? I'm going to have to stretch. I don't want to pull anything. It's Jim Gaffigan, JimGaffigan.com. And remember the Steve Cochran Show, 6 till 10, Monday through Friday. It's all I'm qualified to do. And thanks for listening.